All right, so before I start, the student union asked me to put up this slide. Stand for election, nominate yourselves, get others to nominate you. I'm sure it's an incredibly rewarding experience to be a USO officer. Anyway, I've done my duty. Right, let's close that window. All right. So, what did we do last time? I introduced the basics of probability. Well, actually, I introduced kind of agent we're aiming for here, which is one who is able to act under uncertainty and behave in a rational manner to achieve what it wants, even when it's got to take risks, in the sense that it doesn't know exactly what the outcomes of its actions are going to be. And that's the realm of decision theory, right? And to make that optimal trade-off, it's quite useful to quantify this notion of risk, or equivalently, quantify the notion of likelihood. If I do this, how likely is it that that will become true? Or given this evidence, is this true of the current state or not? To actually quantify the degree to which you should believe those things. And we're doing that through probabilistic inference. So I just introduced the basics of probability theory and the axioms. What we're going to do today is look at joint probability distributions and Bayes' rule, and the way in which Bayes' rule can help you exploit independence assumptions to make the table of joint probability distributions that you have to look at that much smaller. And then what I'm going to do on Thursday and Friday's lecture is propose a much more compact representation of problems that really exploit this notion of independence. And if it weren't for some things being independent of others, inferring things using probability theory would really be completely impractical and useless to you in making any decision with any kind of over any problem with any kind of real world complexity. All right, so let's just get into a very quick thing of the some of the terms that I spoke about last week. So let's suppose you've got the joint probability distributions. In other words, for every atomic event that might happen, you have a probability assigned to that atomic event, okay? But you're not normally interested in the likelihood of just one event happening. You're interested in whether an event with certain properties might happen, okay? In other words, you've got some kind of arbitrary query, like, do I have toothache? Not, do I have toothache and my sister have toothache and the weather is sunny and blah, blah, blah. Whatever other, you know, sort of literals might be in your model, you're not looking for specific values for all those literals. You're only interested in the truth values of some of those literals. So you have some arbitrary query, and you've got some evidence, right? That stuff you've observed, that stuff you know for true, for sure. And what you want to do is compute the posterior probability of your query, right? An arbitrary query given probabilities for each atomic event. So you can think of that joint probability distribution, or equivalently, the probability you assign to each atomic event, as essentially some kind of knowledge base. And although it's not, table lookup is not the way people do this, that's where I'm going to start, is with a joint probability distribution set out as a table, and how you use that to answer just arbitrary queries about what's likely to be true and what's likely to be false. And I'm setting it up that way because it makes the way people normally infer, the algorithms for doing probabilistic inference that much easier to understand if you get the table lookup thing first. So here's this dentist domain, right? And in the dentist domain, I can either have toothache or not. I can have a cavity or not. And the dentist may have caught his probe in my tooth or not. Okay, so I've got three Boolean variables, making 2^3, which is 8 possible atomic events. And each of those 8 events corresponds to a cell in this table. Okay, so for example, that little number there, that is the probability assigned to the atomic event that I've got a cavity and toothache, but no catch, right? The dentist hasn't caught his probe in my tooth. And here is, down here, this 0.576, that is the atomic event corresponding to no toothache, no cavity, and no catch, okay? Now, you can, from this joint probability distribution, joint over all three variables, right? Each one of these probabilities, each one of these numbers corresponds to the probability of a combination of specific values for each of your three variables. You can take this joint probability distribution and compute from that using the axioms of probability. Any arbitrary query, any Boolean combination of values for these variables. So for example, the probability that I have a catch or a cavity, what do? Well, you sum over all the cells where either catch is true or cavity is true or both are true, which is along here, right? These are all catch, cavity is true, plus this one, this one and this one, which are the two cells where cavity is catch is true and cavity is false, right? And the answer then is 0.36. So that's just the axioms of probability at work. Allows you to do this table lookup and sum over the relevant probabilities of the atomic events that essentially satisfy this description. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. So what did I do there? That's a specific example. But actually it's a specific example of a general process you can use when you've got some query, known as marginalization. So if what I'm interested in is the probability of Y, but what I've got is a joint probability distribution over both Y and Z, then to compute this probability Y, I take every possible value that Z could have in combination with those values of Y, and I sum over them. So you go back here, what did I do? I summed over every possible value of toothache and not toothache. And I summed, when I had catch, I summed over the values of cavity and not cavity, right? So I'm just marginalizing here. I'm summing over stuff. And the general formula looks like that when you talk about it in the abstract, right? Algebraically. So for example, the probability of cavity is the sum of the probabilities of all the atomic events where cavity is true. And there are four of them, right? Given that there are four possible combinations of values to toothache and catch, because toothache can be true or false, catch can be true or false. And you can have any combination of those. So long as cavity is true, you should stick, you know, the probability for that atomic event in there. And that gives you the sum of these four numbers, which gives you 0.2. Okay? So that's all I did here. Okay? Now, conditioning is a variant where instead of summing over the joint probability distribution, you sum over the conditional probability. So remember Bayes' rule, right? That the joint probability is the product of this conditional probability plus times the prior, right? So the probability of YZ is the probability of Y given Z times the probability of Z. So it's another way of writing the same thing given the axioms of probability theory. And sometimes this is useful, in fact a lot of the time, this is useful because it is easier to count, to estimate these conditional probabilities directly than it is to estimate the joint probabilities directly. Sometimes, okay, it depends on the problem. Okay, if you've got some sample of stuff, you've done some kind of, you work in a pharmaceutical company and you've got trials happening, got trial data coming out of your ears with all these people that have been taking this drug and you're trying to work out the side effects of it and so on, quite often it's easier to count events in this way than it is in this way. Right, so here, for example, is the probability that you have a cavity given that you've got a toothache. Using Bayes' rule, that's the joint probability over the probability of the toothache. Well, I just told you what the probability of the toothache was using marginalization. The probability of the cavity and toothache, again, you can compute using marginalization, this time marginalizing over the variable catch, right? And it turns out to be 0.6, which is much bigger than the probability of a cavity, the prior probability of a cavity, as it turns out. Okay. So in that respect, toothache is positive evidence for cavity because it boosts the, when you compare the prior and the posterior probability, the latter is higher. Now, normalization is another big word for a very simple concept. Just as marginalization is a big word for just sum over stuff. Normalization is make sure your probability is sum to one. Now, normalization is really, really useful because by and large, it's you'll find in practical situations that you will never be able to estimate this thing directly, the prior probabilities. And luckily, quite often, you don't have to. Right? So suppose that what we're interested in is the probability that you've got a cavity given toothache. Okay? So the probability distribution, essentially, of cavity given toothache. So the probability that it's true given toothache, we're interested in that, and the probability that it's false given toothache. Now, given Bayes' rule, it's the probability of cavity and toothache over the probability of toothache. But the probability of toothache's given, it's fixed. That doesn't vary with the value of cavity, right? It's your observed evidence. It's true, okay? And so it means that you can marginalize to get this and just treat the probability of toothache, just a whatever, a constant for now. Use marginalization to get these probability distributions for cavity, toothache, and catch where cavity is true and cavity is false. You're using marginalization to sum over the cases where catch is true and catch is false. And you're interested in cavity being true and cavity being false as given by these pair of numbers here. It's just calculated through marginalization this way, right? And you end up with this. Now, you don't need to know at this point what the prior, you don't need to compute directly what the probability of toothache is. All you have to do is make these two guys sum to one. They've got to sum to one because you have a cavity or you don't. It's a Boolean variable, right? So these two numbers, to be real probabilities, they've got to sum to one. So what's alpha going to be? Pardon? What is alpha? Five? Yes. Sorry, yes. Yeah, it's basically, but more generally, it's 1 over the sum of these numbers, which is 1 over 0.2, which is 5. Yeah. Okay? So you don't have to necessarily be in a situation where in your trials you need to know what this prior is, right? When you're doing the counting and working out your query. All right. So the more general inference procedure is you've got a query, right? I want to know the value of X, and you got some evidence, E. What you have is not, you don't have directly this number. You've got to compute it from the numbers you do have. And the numbers you do have, if you've got this like table lookup thing of joint probabilities, actually are numbers that look like that. Numbers for stuff like that, right? So you've got other variables, Y, that aren't observed, right? The value of Y is not observed in the way that value of E is, right? You don't know what the value of Y is. But you're not interested in the value of Y directly. I'm only interested in the value of X. But I need to think about Y because Y influences the value of X. But Y is hidden to me. Its value is hidden to me. When you're in that situation, you just use marginalization and normalization to compute your query. Okay? Marginalization to sum out all possible values of Y, and normalization to get yourself back into a probability distribution where the sums of the probabilities over all the possible values of X is 1, right? Okay? So when you've got this table lookup, this guy, you can compute anything you want from it, anything, okay? I could compute the probability that I have a cavity given that I've got toothache or no catch, Right, I mean, make it up. Doesn't matter. You just sum over the relevant things and normalize, if you have to normalize. Okay, so that's general inference, but although this table lookup looks trivial and easy, it very quickly gets completely impractical, because in any real case scenario, you're going to have tens of thousands of variables, potentially. I mean, certainly in natural language processing, if you're doing parsing, for example, statistical parsing, you're talking tens of thousands of random variables, because the whole procedure is approximated through informative features like word forms, lemmas, prior tags, you know, syntactic complexity, all these features that kind of approximate the context in which you're making a decision about what the grammar rule is that applies here. And, you know, these tables become impossibly large and certainly impossible to estimate the probabilities for them during the learning process. But impossibly large even to do, let alone to build. You can't even effectively do inference over them once you do have the probabilities. That's sort of bad news for a joint probability distribution, right? Suppose I have, 100 Boolean variables. I need 100 Boolean variables to express the atomic events that can happen in my domain. That is going to be 2^100 cells that I need in my table. It's huge and going to become very unwieldy very quickly. So, thank goodness, most domains are domains where, while you might require, say, 100 Boolean variables, a lot of the variables will work independently of one another, right? And in that circumstance, hurrah, you can massively reduce the size of the table that you need, okay? So let's add to our dentist domain some weather, for example, okay? So what I want to do is compute the probability that the weather is cloudy, that I've got toothache, a catch, and a cavity. Okay. Now, using Bayes' rule, it's this, right? So that's this joint probability distribution over cloudy weather, and these particular values in my dentist domain, is the probability, the conditional probability distribution that the weather's cloudy, the toothache, catch, and cavity, times the prior, right? That joint probability of toothache, catch, and cavity. Well, the good news is, regardless of what's happening in the dentist, you know, the probability of the weather won't change, right? Dentistry doesn't influence weather. There's no cause-effect happening here. And so the probability that the weather's cloudy, given all this stuff, is just the probability, the prior, the probability that the weather's cloudy. And so this whole joint probability becomes just a product of probabilities. Now, this is a 2-cubed, i.e. 8-cell table. This, assuming that we've got 4 possible values for weather, is a 4-element table. So instead of having a 4 × 2³, which is 32-cell table, we have 2 tables, one that's got 8 cells and one that's got 4. That's much smaller than 32. Now, that's just a trivial example, because 32 is not very big. But you can see that in general, if you're dealing with 100 variables and you've got a lot of independence among them, so, you know, the posteriors, given some set of variables is the same as the prior on that variable, then this is really great news, because you're going to have to estimate way, way fewer probabilities to infer arbitrary query, you know, the probabilities of arbitrary queries. Yes?
How many values do you say whether that?
4. Yeah? So that's this guy. So I can't remember what they are. Cloudy, sunny, rainy, and something, foggy or something, right? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about independence. because what we've got here is independence entirely from toothache catching cavity, but the more general case is actually conditional independence. But let's work towards that. Let's just talk about independence first. Right, so you've got X and what X is independent of Y. If the conditional, if your posterior beliefs in X are basically the same as your priors on X, given whatever you know about Y. In other words, that's like saying, even if I observe particular values of Y, the degree to which I believe X has a particular value won't change. Okay, if you think about the kind of semantics I was putting on top of probability here about degree of belief. This is just saying the probability of X given whatever value of Y is just the probability of X. Y's got no influence on the degree to which you believe the value of X. Equivalently, given Bayes' rule, you could express it that way. Or you could express it that way, right? That the joint probability is the products of the priors. Okay? They're all essentially equivalent to each other given Bayes' rule. Now, whether you can make this kind of assumption, of course, is your call, your judgment call, when you're designing or representing a domain in a kind of probabilistic environment. Largely what people have to do when they're modeling things is make a judgment call about whether you can treat two things as independent of one another or not. Quite often you're making not entirely justified independence assumptions. They're ones you're forced to make the whole problem tractable. This is certainly true of natural language processing, but I think it's true of virtually every arena, every problem space in AI. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, but basically we're exploiting independence as much as we can in order to make reasoning in the domain practical. And with all this work on statistical inference, it's always a judgment call on what the optimal trade-off is between, on the one hand, capturing a domain accurately, and on the other, making reasoning within that domain efficient. It's a very, very hard optimization process, and one that takes years and years of research experience to handle, and it's to do, and it's always a matter of contention among researchers about what are sensible independence assumptions and what aren't. But, I mean, with weather and dentistry, let's just assume it's pretty uncontroversial that the dentist stuff, is you can divide the domain of weather and dentistry combined into dentist stuff and weather stuff and treat the two as independent of one another. If you're coin tossing, then each coin toss is independent of all the other coin tosses. Let's assume, right? So here's Bayes' rule written up again in all its various forms. And so Bayes' rule is coming into play again and again when we want to perform some probabilistic inference, i.e. work out the extent to which you should believe that some variable has a value, that value being hidden to you, right? Given what you can observe, i.e. values of other variables that you have observed. I mean, that's generally what's going on with probabilistic inferences. You're inferring values for things you can't see from values of things you can. So let's take meningitis, for example. Something that you can't see directly, but you can see symptoms of meningitis. So let's just stick some numbers on this. I'm sitting there with a stiff neck and I'm wondering whether I've got meningitis. And meningitis causes stiff neck in, say, half the cases of people that have meningitis. The probability that you've got meningitis may be 1 in 50,000 at any one time in Britain. About 1 in 50,000 people have meningitis. And the probability of a stiff neck, let's for the sake of argument say it's 1 over 20. This is the thing I'm interested in, right? I got my stiff neck. Do I have meningitis? Right? So in other words, the probability that I've got meningitis given that I've got a stiff neck. Using Bayes' rule, you can do this, right? You can make it the product in, of the probability I have stiff neck given meningitis, the probability of meningitis over the probability of stiff neck. Plug in the numbers and you find it's 1 over 5,000. So your posterior probability that you've got meningitis is, you know, shot up compared with the prior, given that you've got a stiff neck. It's still quite low, but it's much higher than just your prior that you've got meningitis. Well, why do this? You know, why don't we just have a number for this directly? Well, the truth is that for most domains, we do this kind of calculation, exploiting Bayes' rule, because these guys are easier to estimate, they're easier to count, right? So there will have been some study done, you know, that's been published in the British Medical Journal or the Lancet or something, looking at the symptoms of meningitis and counting things like in half the cases they had a stiff neck. I mean, that stuff is out there through medical trials. And, you know, similarly with the probability of meningitis, what may be harder actually to compute is the prior probability of a stiff neck. That's not the kind of thing that will happen, that you'll learn from medical trials typically. That's all right if what you're actually interested in is the probability distribution over the value of meningitis, this Boolean variable. I'm interested not only in the probability that I do have it given the stiff neck, also the probability I don't. Because then I won't need this number. I can just use normalization, right? So this is the normalized, I'm interested in both the values of M and not M. And using the nominator, it's basically equal to that and then normalized. This will be an easier sum to work out, so long as, or the usefulness of this essentially, is it's more useful if working out the number of cases of stiff neck given no meningitis is easier to calculate given the trials or the data you have access to than this prior of stiff neck. So that's a moot point, who knows? But you know, it basically depends on what your sample space is and what you can count in that sample space as to, you know, whether this kind of breakdown of the probabilities is going to be useful to you. Okay, but by and large, diagnostic knowledge, i.e. the ones that go from symptoms to causes, is very fragile compared with the opposite, the cause-effect link. Given that I've got meningitis, what are my symptoms, right? What am I like? Do I have a fever? Do I have a stiff neck? You know, have I got pains in my joints and all that? That's much more robust information to count. So using marginalization and normalization, you can combine evidence as well. So here, for example, is the probability distribution of cavity given toothache and catch. Okay, you're doing a similar thing as you did here. Well, marginalization, you're looking at here, you're not marginalizing because there were only three variables. But anyway, so this is the probability of cavity, toothache, and catch. This is the probability of no cavity, toothache, and catch. And then you normalize over it. So in the probabilistic model, in the Bayesian model, this is equal to that. And for computing that, you'd need to know this. Which is a sum, as we saw, from the joint probability table. And that's almost as hard to calculate as the joint probability table in the first place. But with independence, things can get better, right? So for example, if we assume that the toothache, whether I've got a toothache or not, is independent of whether I've got a catch or not, given the value of cavity, then the probability of toothache and catch given cavity, it's just the probability of toothache given cavity times the probability of catch given cavity. This is a notion of conditional independence, right? Suppose I have a cavity. Then maybe I've got a toothache, maybe I've got a cat, maybe I've got both. But given the value of cavity, my estimate on whether I have a toothache or not is independent of my estimate of whether I've got a cavity or not, a catch or not. That's the issue. Okay, because they are two independent causes of the same effect. So this is conditional independence. Basically, the joint probability of X and Y given Z is just the product of the conditional probabilities X given Z and Y given Z. This is an equivalent form of the same thing given Bayes' rule. So suppose I've got toothache and catch. I want to know if I've got a cavity. Then using conditional independence, it's just the product of these probabilities, right? This is because whether I've got a cavity or not is independent of catch, given that I've got a toothache. So as before, this allows you to decompose a massive joint probability distribution table. Because now, given the independence assumptions that we have between toothache and catch, given cavity, I don't need the massive probability distribution of 2 to the n that I had, but in the order of linear. And it's only that makes probabilistic inference scalable, right? It's this notion of conditional independence. So it's not that we have to go for complete independence, this weather situation. Just conditional independence is sometimes good enough, right? So we have a single symptom that can have 2 independent causes, right? And if we observe that symptom, we can reason about those causes in the condition of that symptom, largely independently of one another, right? As per those formulae here. This gives rise to the naive Bayes model, okay? So where you've got a cause and it has several possible effects, right? So I have a cavity and it could cause a catch and it can cause toothache and it can cause me to have a sleepless night and all sorts of stuff. And you assume that if the cause were absent, those effects would essentially be independent of one another. That's essentially what this is saying, right? And so the probability of the effect of an individual effect given the cause is all you need to compute the probability of all these joint effects given the cause. Okay, so the probability that I have a toothache and a catch given the cavity is just the probability of the toothache given the cavity and the probability of a catch given the cavity. So what the dentist does when he probes is essentially only dependent on the cavity. It's not dependent on whether I've got toothache, right? Whether his probe catches my tooth or not. Depends only on the cavity, but not the toothache. Given that I have a cavity, it's more likely that I have a toothache. So if I know he catches my tooth, then it may increase my posterior for a toothache. It may. But if I know the value of cavity, I don't care if he's caught it or not. That's all I need to know to work out my probability in toothache. Right? That's the idea. If you've got the cause, I don't care what other values these effects might have. If I'm interested in this nth effect here, all I need to know is whether this cause is true. If I know this cause, then I kind of don't care about these other effects. If this cause is hidden to me, then of course the values of these are really interesting to me if my query is this. And you could see that in that sum. Because the probability of this effect being true will depend on this effect being true. Because they're all caused by the same thing. Okay. Now, this kind of model is called a Bayesian classifier, right? So if this is the kind of query we're interested in, you're essentially turning a big fat joint probability into a product of much smaller probabilities, which you can do table lookup at this point, right? Because you're, instead of having, well, here it would be, you know, 2 to the n plus 1 cells in a table, you've got far, far fewer, right? 2 for the cause, and n for and 2n, one for each of the n effects, which is a match. It's linear as opposed to exponential in size, and that's brilliant because it means that you can use this sort of Bayesian type model. It does scale up because it is linear and not exponential on the size of the domain. Where the domain is measured by the number of random variables you need. So that's great. And we will be looking at Bayesian models a lot for the next few lectures. And it works in spite of the fact that it's kind of stupid, because you're making really pretty stupid independence assumptions quite often. It works amazingly well empirically. It just works in practice, even though in theory you might think that these are unreasonable independence assumptions. In practice, it's amazing how accurate they can get on quite complex reasoning tasks. So I'm going to leave it there. What I'm going to do next time is provide you with an introduction to Bayesian networks, which are essentially a very compact way of representing conditional independence, supplying you with a very simple way of reasoning, doing probabilistic reasoning and computing probabilities for arbitrary queries given an arbitrary set of evidence. Are there any questions at this point? Okay, see you Thursday.
Thank you. it's going to be like the evening, maybe. The day.
Maybe I'll ask questions and no one will answer it. And I'll
just try. Oh, yeah. Like, you can tell people what it is.
Oh, wow.
So we've got 1 megabyte per.
1 megabyte?
Yeah.
Great.
Her ones are about 200 kilobytes. So let's see. 23 pages.
Hello, my name is Nick Bowden.
So the scanning function is posterior probability of the graph. Wait, I think we've done this. Did we do the first lecture already?
No.
This one says where in the data are electrolytic.